You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
There are so many challenges to being a special ed teacher. The behaviors, the paperwork, managing your team. But I think one of the hardest parts of it is doing it by yourself. You feel like you are on an island because some of your colleagues don't really understand the complexities of your role. And that is exactly why I created the Professional Development Membership, a place where you could connect with other special ed teachers who are going through the same struggles you are, celebrating the same wins you are, and a place that gives you training that is actually relevant to your classroom. This membership is going to walk you step by step and give you a path and a plan for exactly what to do to run a successful classroom. If you feel overwhelmed and not knowing where to start, this is the one membership you need. So not only will you get the training, you will also get the stuff. So you're going to learn the strategies to put into action, and then you will have the downloads right there. So if this all sounds like exactly what you need, I want you to sign up for the waitlist because we are opening enrollment on August 4th. And this date is important because we only open enrollment once a year because we want everyone to go through the content together. It's kind of like building together this path and plan that I always talk about. We go through each step together. So August 4th is when the doors open and I want you to be ready. I don't want you to miss it. It is a busy time of year, so it's easy to miss it. And last thing, before then, I want you to ask your admin if they will cover the cost of the membership for you. Half of the members in the Professional Development Membership have the cost of their membership covered by their administrator. Yep, half. So right now, click in the link in the show notes. We have a template for you to ask your administrators to cover the cost. Never hurts to ask. Sign up for that waitlist because there's a special little promo when you sign up, and I can't wait to see you in the membership.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today I'm chatting with Erica Barr and Tiffany Burns, the authors of Connecting Through Conversation, a playbook for talking with students. Erica and Tiffany each have over 20 years experience in the education world, and today we are covering a lot of topics. We start off with talking about how to create successful, inclusive environments in school. But that's a big topic, right? So under that umbrella, we start talking about the importance of teacher and student relationships, which both Erica and Tiffany are super passionate about talking about. That's a big component of their book. We start talking about challenging behavior. We start talking about creating collaborative relationships with colleagues. We cover a lot in this interview. I absolutely loved talking to Erica and Tiffany. They have a lot of great advice, and I love the perspective they have on a lot of important topics. So let's go ahead and hear from Erica and Tiffany. Hi, Erica and Tiffany. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having us. Thrilled to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to join you today.
I am excited to talk about one of my favorite topics and something I know that you're both passionate about talking about inclusion. And there's a lot that we can cover here. And there's always, I think, more to discuss and more areas that as a school and as a community and as a culture, we can grow here. And I know this is something that you both are passionate about talking about.
Absolutely.
So let's start off with the hard stuff. Why does inclusion and creating inclusive environments in our schools, why is this not something that happens easily?
Well, I think education was set up a very long time ago. And I feel like schools are some of the slowest places for change. And so it's really hard to shift mindsets and shift ways of doing things that have been embedded for a really, really long time. And so just kind of reimagining how we can do school and how we can really make sure that we're serving all students to the best possible way for each of them in a way that is supportive for all kids is tricky, because we have a way that it looked when we were in school. We have a way that it looked, you know, when we were in our pre-service programs, and trying to reimagine that can be really challenging.
It's really not set up for today's learner. Like if I think about, you know, today's adolescent child, I mean, they're even just thinking about their attention span. It's pretty different than, you know, where our attention spans were like 20, 30 years ago with like TikTok and YouTube shorts. Like even at that, like, I mean, that alone is, our classrooms aren't set up for that.
So true. Yeah. And Tiffany and I both have raised or are raising teenagers. And so we know all about that attention span. And when we have kind of watched our own kids experience school, I think we've learned a lot of lessons also about what works and what doesn't work.
Well, and I think too, you know, I went into education over 20 years ago. And when I was doing my education preparation, like when I was in my master's for teaching, I didn't have a lot of courses on how to ensure, I don't know that I had any courses, to be perfectly honest, on inclusion and the importance of that. And I think, I mean, I have since become a huge advocate and a huge proponent of that, but I don't believe that I was prepared for that when I first entered into education.
Yeah. I think even now teachers aren't being adequately prepared, which is unfortunate. Like a fresh out of college 22-year-old teacher is not adequately prepared for all of the responsibility and the workload that can come along with that as well.
No, absolutely. Well, and now, so I've been, like I said, I've been in education for over 20 years. I've been a school administrator since 2012. And then Erica and I wrote this book a couple years ago. And so this year, I took a sabbatical this year. It's kind of hard to travel and support schools and do a bunch of professional development around the country and be a full-time principal. So I took a sabbatical this year, and I've been teaching full-time in a pre-service pre-service teacher program at a local university, and I am absolutely loving it. But what I'm building in and embedding into every single class is that idea of inclusion, and how do we really use universal design for learning, and how do we use these different strategies to be able to support our diverse learners. So to my mind, it isn't just a class, it's the way we do things, you know, like how do we embed that just into our daily routine and our daily instruction?
I also think there's some silos in education that exist. And sometimes if you've studied to be kind of a third grade teacher or a high school science teacher, you may feel you don't have the skills to support students with exceptionalities. Mm-hmm. Maybe you feel like you didn't learn how to do that in school. Maybe you don't have the right kind of experience. And there can be this mindset of, oh, there's an expert who is going to do that, so I am not going to worry about it. And not that they don't want to, or that they don't feel as though they love these kids just as much. They just don't feel adequately prepared. And so building those partnerships between our general education teachers and our specialists, and also just helping folks remember that it's all just good teaching. And so when we can put our collective expertise together, we can do amazing things for kids.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that it is just good teaching, and it has to happen in every classroom. And that point you made as well, it can't just be one class in college. It has to be embedded into every kind of credit of your coursework, because mm-hmm. it's going to be part of every classroom. Even if you technically don't have a child with an IEP in your class, you still are going to have to use those inclusive practices, because you are going to have to provide accommodations, because you're going to have learners that have unique learning needs in your class. Thinking about, you know, logistically, I think logistics always rule the world in schools. Like, you know, and we talked about, you know, the way schools physically were even set up, you know, some buildings, like the building that I first worked in was a 150-year-old building and had like each classroom had like three plugs. And you were like, how can I put a smart board in this room? Right. And so like logistically, what things can make
inclusion kind of challenging? And what can we do tangibly to make an environment more inclusive, thinking about like the stuff and what concrete steps can make an environment more inclusive beyond kind of the next steps that we need of like collaborative practices? But what are some of the tangible things we need to make an environment inclusive?
Well, I just had the amazing opportunity to rebuild our school. So I got to be on our school was due for an upgrade. So we were able to do this redesign and rebuild to really fit the students that we have in front of us. The unfortunate part is that was during COVID. So that added a whole different layer of stress. However, what we were able to really think about is the changing sensory needs of our students. So we were thinking about things like lighting, you know, and different areas within the classroom spaces. What we saw are a number of students that were becoming dysregulated during class for whatever reason. And then they were having to leave the classroom, go to like my office as the principal or our child development specialist office or our student advocate, and really have this other place to calm down that was outside of the classroom. So then we get the student really, you know, regulated, calm, and then we have to do the really hard job of getting them reintegrated back into the classroom where they're feeling nervous or uncomfortable or even ashamed or, you know, just not comfortable re-entering the space. And what we really found is that what we wanted to do is create spaces within our classrooms that allowed for students to be able to decompress and regulate. And so we created in every little, in every space in the school, in all of our classrooms, a little kind of calm down corner or a nook. This was for an elementary school, by the way, it was K-5. And so every one of those spaces had a cozy bean bag and some different sensory tools and just different items to help a student get calm and relaxed while they were still in the classroom. So then it was less of a student really leaving the space and more of a student just needing to take a break within the space. What we found is that was so much easier for the student to reintegrate. They could still almost pay attention to what was going on. They just needed that little moment. And we found it really helped reduce our behavior referrals, and it made it so much more comfortable and not only comfortable, but convenient for students as well and the class.
Oh, I love that.
And I think also when we think about the physical space, right, so all of those things that Tiffany just talked about are so critical. And then there's some logistical pieces that we just have to consider when we're setting up our schedule, for example. Do we have our amazing educators in the right places at the right times to support our students? Is the daily schedule built in such a way that students have entry and access points no matter what's happening or where they need to go or what they need to access throughout the day? Is there enough flexibility for perhaps support professionals and teachers and our specialists to put their heads together around students and really make a comprehensive plan? Some of those just logistical components of how do we have a student go throughout their day, and then also how are educators able to collaborate and work together throughout the day? The scheduling component is critical when we think about successfully supporting all students.
So that's a great point. I hear from teachers all the time that, you know, they struggle with co-teaching, with inclusion, with any of these models because they don't have that common planning time. They don't have that time to collaborate with their colleagues. And, you know, what advice do you have for teachers in that position that, you know, don't have supportive administrators like you two that are like hungry for this? Like I need this time with my colleagues to be able to facilitate for this inclusion opportunity for my student. How can they advocate for that? How can they communicate the need for this with their administrators?
So something you may not know about me is I actually love cooking, but I've been so busy lately that I've had to come up with some little hacks to make cooking a little easier. And one of my favorite hacks recently is using frozen Washington red raspberries. They're picked at peak freshness and frozen right away, so when you defrost them, they're still so good. Last week, the girls and I made muffins, and they were delicious. And I think next week I'm going to make salad dressing with them because I have them in my freezer and I can defrost them anytime. I love that they're always ready to go. I don't waste them because when I buy fresh ones, sometimes I don't use them all. And I hate wasting food. I usually get my frozen raspberries at Kroger or Meijer's, and this has just made cooking and baking for me a lot easier. Look for Product of the US on the bag. So if you want more details on where to find American frozen red raspberries plus other recipe ideas and cooking tips, head over to redraz.org. That's redraz.org, and you'll find other retailers and inspiration for every meal, plus some info on how these berries go from farm to freezer, plus the quality with the quality that you can taste.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I think for all of us, we have to think outside of the box when it comes to scheduling. And so I think going with an open question of, I can see how successful Susie can be when we're able to put our heads together, and we'd like to integrate that into our weekly or daily schedule. What are some ideas? What are some ways? What are some things we can shift to make that possible? You know, not every educator has to start at the same time and end at the same time. Not every, you know, week when we're setting up our special schedule, when we're setting up our prep schedule, are we making this one of the first considerations or one of the first things that we're thinking about as we're setting that up? Or is it that afterthought or the thing at the end of the process? So really going in with that kind of open heart, open mind, this is going to look different than it looked last year. My schedule is going to be different. And for the administrator to think about, okay, I don't need to have this idea that everyone starts and ends at the same time. This is our specials rotation. This is our prep rotation. This is how we schedule educators into prep. We need to kind of throw that out and try and start a little bit from scratch and just go, okay, let's start from that. Let's start from the common prep and work our way out from there. Or let's think about what it would look like if the special ed teacher came in a half an hour later and was able to have a half an hour at the end of the day where they're able to meet with paraprofessionals because that's a part of their workday. Whatever it is that is going to make it possible, it's not likely to be how we've always done things. And so just being open to fresh possibilities and getting a little bit creative when it comes to scheduling is the best advice. And then also prioritizing. It has to be the first thing we look at. And where we spend our time, how we spend our time, shows what our priorities are. It's the clearest way to see what is important. And so when we think about it in terms of what's the most important to us as a school, as an educator, If inclusion is high up on that list, then that should be the first scheduling priority. And so just kind of thinking about, in what order am I doing this and what's driving my schedule?
Oh, I love that you said that, Erica, about the priorities of time, because in education, I just don't know anyone in education that says ever, gosh, I have so much time on my hands. You know? Like I have so much time to get everything done. I mean, it's just, we don't have that. We don't have the time and we don't always have the resources that we need. And so I think we have to be really mindful about how we're spending our time and when, right? So if we're thinking about, you know, being able to really set a student up for success, then we're trying to do that in the most proactive way possible. And unfortunately, there's no blame or shame in this, but just in education, due to our constraints, we're frequently in a more reactive place, right? We're responding to things after the fact. And so we're spending all that time reacting and responding. And if we just shift our thinking a little bit and we spend some time really sitting down, thinking, prioritizing, collaborating, just like Erica was talking about, in a more proactive way on the front end, we're spending the time either way. You know, I'd rather spend it in a way that's going to better set our students up for success. And it's so easy, I think, in education for us to just go into our classrooms and close our doors and just, you know, try to do our job. But really, these are all our kids. you know, and then we're just one person. And ideally, we're working with folks who also love kids and care about kids just as much as we do and are really dedicated and committed to their success. So if we have that opportunity to get some really brilliant ideas for someone else, or to sit down and just have a brainstorming session where we're thinking about, I wonder what's going on here. I wonder what, you know, the antecedent, what is happening that is setting this behavior up? And, you know, we talk a lot about all of those pieces, but just really spending time thinking about why the behavior is happening, when it's happening, and what, you know, what the consequences are of that. Being able to have time to do that with one another, we're either going to spend the time reacting, or we can spend the time at the beginning to try to figure out how to best address it in a systematic way.
And in the long run, you might even spend less time if you do it in that proactive way, right?
I agree.
You could be more successful. Oh my gosh. I'm over here like nodding. You can't see me, but I'm like, yes, yes. I mean, I love the point about looking at someone's schedule and like knowing where their priorities are, because mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, is that true? Like you can tell if the special ed caseload was an afterthought or not in such a huge way. And if this is going to be a priority for the school community, it has to be in the forefront of the schedule and of the school plan, because it's going to take creativity and that thinking outside the box. And it like we kind of started this conversation, it can't just be done the way it's always been done, because that model, as we've kind of realized over time, does not work for a lot of our kids. And that's okay. We just have to think of something different. And that's where that, you know, being proactive and those conversations and those discussions come in. It's like, okay, well, you know, having all of the fourth grades at one gym period doesn't really work. What could we do differently? And how could we, you know, stagger the schedules, or how could we, you know, arrange this differently? Having those conversations to problem solve is going to save us time in the long run, really.
Absolutely.
So let's kind of switch gears for a second. I think, you know, obviously a lot goes into having these great inclusive environments, these are having great, good schedules, having good collaborative relationship with peers. I think to me, another really important thing that goes into successful inclusion is the relationship between the teachers and the students. I oftentimes get asked by parents, like professionally or even like personally and socially, like, what, you know, what schools do you think are great around here? What programs or what clinics are this? And I never want to like endorse a certain place, but I'm like always like, oh gosh, it just depends on the teacher, you know, because to me, it's always about that like teacher student relationship. And I know you guys are passionate about talking about this too. What role does the teacher student relationship play in a successful inclusion situation?
I think it is the primary thing that is going to make it successful or not successful. And that's true, honestly, for all kids. The relationship between the teacher and the student is going to be the linchpin that is going to make it a successful year or not. And so as educators, we have to focus first on building relationships and making sure that our connections are strong. In our book, we talk about the art and the science of building relationships, and we really focus in on three primary areas as being the most critical, and that is to listen well, both what's said and what's unsaid, to our students and our colleagues, and then to build trusting relationships where students know that they're safe and that this is an environment that is safe and also an educator that is safe. And then also treating every single person in our sphere with dignity at all times. And so we really dig into what that looks like. And that's true certainly for students who have exceptionalities, but it's true for all students.
Well, and so when Erica and I were writing this book, we're both kind of kid magnets, you know, like we're both those people that just have a really easy time getting along with and connecting with kids. We're also people who, you know, when we're talking to students, if we give the direction or an expectation, kids pretty much follow it. And so we both had the experience of people saying, but what are you doing? Why does that work? How come they listen to you and they're not listening to me, or what's going on? And so we spent a lot of time really thinking about what is it that students really need? Like, what are these concrete steps? What are these really practical tools that we can do that'll really help build that relationship with students? And it turns out, if you're someone that's really good at this, and I would say most all special education teachers are, and so many teachers are, but if you're really, really good at it, you don't really necessarily think about what those steps are. You don't think about what goes into that strong relationship. You just kind of do it. And then sometimes we get a student that challenges us in different ways, or that we're not able to connect with in those really more natural ways. And that's when it's really tricky, right? Because we're going, but I don't get it. Like, what is going on here? And what's the secret sauce that I'm missing? And that's what Erica and I have really tried to demystify with our book, with really practical strategy. I mean, we call it a playbook because we want people to be able to just pick it up, try it out, and then and have it work.
Instead of just being like, I don't know, kids like me.
Right. Or the other part is, you know, both of us have been, you know, Erica's a superintendent. I've been a school administrator. We can't just say to our staff and the folks that come to us legitimately saying things like, I need help. I need support. I don't know how I can connect with this student, or what I'm doing isn't working. We can't just say to them, we'll get better.
Yeah,
we'll just figure it out. Like, that's not supportive or helpful at all. Yeah. That's really being rather dismissive and saying, well, that's your problem, and not thinking about this again, as these are all our kids. What are we going to do together?
And this idea sometimes of, you know, create relationships, connect with kids, can be pretty subjective and vague sometimes, because there are some kids that are really challenging to connect with. And oftentimes those are the kids that we're having a hard time behaviorally in our classes with. So the idea of having a more objective, like, let's break this down, what does it really mean to create this relationship, is like probably the support those teachers are looking for with those, in general, you know, hypothesizing here, types of kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think relationships can be especially challenging when we're trying to figure out how to support a student with their behavior, right? And that's a time when it becomes all the more important to dig in. We think about this idea. One of the strategies we talk about is caring out loud, which just means explicitly telling and sharing and showing students how much we care about them. And this is especially critical if we've got a student who is needing a lot of reminders or a lot of redirections or a lot of support in terms of their behavioral choices, because I love kids. All educators love kids. We like to believe that. I know that. They know that. Their colleagues know that. But students don't know that. They don't come into school thinking, oh my gosh, every educator in this building loves and cares about me. And the reason they're kind of on my case is because they care so much about me being successful. That's not what they think. And so we have to be very intentional about letting them know, because otherwise they could believe, oh my gosh, this teacher doesn't like me, or this educator doesn't like me. And we're very unlikely to have any success with them if that's what they believe. So when we have a student who's struggling, we first start with digging into this idea of caring out loud and making sure that they know that no matter what they do, we care about them, and there's really nothing that they can do about that. And we have a couple of strategies to support that.
I love that phrase, caring out loud. And I think that that really points to, I think, some students, what a really hard learning history they have with school that teachers have to really fight against and really recreate a different learning history with school. You know, their kids come to school with a lot of baggage. So, you know, teachers have to really work against that and create a new narrative about school and learning and teachers, and create kind of a new narrative there, which can be an uphill battle.
I totally agree with that, Sasha. I think it's really challenging, and yet it's doable. You know, I mean, it just takes intentionality. It takes time. And I don't want to say it just as in it's easy. I would say it's not easy. I think, you know, there's some parts of it that are simple, you know, like we have to say this and we have to show up consistently. But I wouldn't say it's easy, especially when students are, their behaviors are challenging for us. And especially when, you know, when we're trying so hard and things aren't working and we're feeling that level of helpless or hopeless, that is when it's super helpful to be able to find your team and to be able to really connect with others and say, you know, what are we going to do? And then looking for different strategies that can help, because that is definitely a time. Like, we don't ever want an educator to feel like they need to give up on a student, right? We want to give them the strategies and tools and support so they can keep showing up. But I just want to honor how hard that is and just how challenging and how exhausting that is for educators. I know so many people that, you know, you say to an educator, oh, this is the kid that keeps you up, you know, that you wake up at 2 a.m. about, and they all nod. They know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, I know who you're talking about. And it's not just one, it's a couple of them, you know. Yeah,
that's in your dreams, quite literally.
Exactly.
One thing that can really help with that is helping ourselves remember that a student's behavior is what they did. It's not who they are. It is a series of actions. It's not who they are as a person. Because we know if a kid could do better, they would do better. And I think for educators, one of the things that it can be really helpful for us to kind of have that mantra in our head, especially when we're struggling, because it helps us to depersonalize the behavior. I think sometimes we know as educators, we're not supposed to take student behaviors personally, but we are people. And so that can be really challenging. So just separating that out can be really helpful. It's also such a more hopeful place to live. Educators are teachers. We got into this work because we want kids to grow and learn. And that's true for English and math, and also in how to share space, how to be well, how to share all of the things that we want for them to be successful humans. And so when they're struggling with their behavior, for us to be able to dig in and say, oh, that's just a skill they don't have yet. They're communicating something to us in a way that they don't know how to do in a school appropriate way yet. And so then it becomes our job to teach them. And that's such a more hopeful place to live than just thinking, oh, this is just a kid who, I've got like air quotes that you can't see, but like a bad kid, right? That's not a place we ever want our head to go, because that's just a hopeless place for us to live as educators.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Oh, so true.
And I think it's really important not only for educators to believe that, but also for students to understand that as well, right? Like, we don't ever want students to think that they are their behavior. We don't want students to see that fixed mindset around behavior. And in education, I think we do a pretty good job around growth mindset for academics. We don't do the best job always around a growth mindset around behavior. And it's really, really helpful that we help kids start to see that they're different from their their behavior. You know, that's a choice that they made, or that's something that they did without thinking. They acted on impulse. That's not who they are. That doesn't mean they always will do that, or they're never going to do something differently. And again, this doesn't mean that we're still having consequences for students. We're still making sure that we're, you know, that certain behaviors, this is the consequence for that type of behavior. It's not about dismissing or ignoring. It's about helping the child see their behavior and feel empowered to be able to make changes moving forward. So they're not hanging out in this place of shame. If I borrow Erica's air quotes and, you know, say the same thing, if a student thinks of themselves as, I'm just a bad kid, well, then they're going to act in ways that show that they're a bad kid. They have given up on themselves as well. So it's really important that, again, by caring out loud, by building in those different routines, by helping students know that we see them as different than their behavior, that's when we can really help them make a shift and have some ownership and agency in their choices and actions moving forward.
Yes, I'm over here nodding. All these things we can't see, air quotes and nodding. Yes, so agree with all of this. And I love the point you made on, like, we're not dismissing these behaviors either. Cause I talk a lot about these same ideas, and sometimes I have people push back like, oh, what? We're just going to let them do these behaviors. And these aren't mutually exclusive. You know, just because we're separating a behavior from a child and accepting a child for who they are and validating, carrying out loud all these ideas doesn't mean we're just like allowing and not having boundaries and consequences for negative behaviors. Those two things can be true, but we can separate these things. And I think there's important distinctions to make from there and allowing learning to happen. And that's when learning can happen and teach those missing skills, which that's really at the core what's happening there. There's skills that are missing.
Well, and if we want students to change their behavior, if we're teaching them, you know, if we're caring about them, if we're treating them with dignity, no matter what, they're more likely to change their behavior than if we get just stuck on the consequence. Again, it's not that we're saying that the consequences aren't important. They are. But the whole goal of a consequence is to have a child change their behavior moving forward. It's not for the sake of the consequence. The point is that we want to change in behavior. And that's the part that we really want to focus on. What do we want our outcomes to be? And how do we want to help them so they can shift this so they can grow and learn?
And I think, like, tying this back to inclusion, I think, you know, thinking about a common obstacle to inclusion. When I was in the classroom, a common obstacle I often had to asking and pushing for any inclusion was often problem behavior. When I approached any gen ed teacher, often it was, oh, I don't know if this would be a good fit because I saw that, you know, Johnny had a meltdown at the playground. I'd be like, yeah, that was 2 years ago. Like, simmer down. Like, and it was always like, that was the pushback. There was the fear of the problem behavior. And, you know, yes, did students in my classroom have histories of problem behavior? Sure. But that was something that we could work through and that I could have collaborated with people that were open to collaborating with if they had that mindset. But, you know, that is an obstacle that can play a role in successful inclusion. And because there's a lot of unknowns in a new setting, right? There's new triggers, there's new antecedents. And so I think that having a team that's ready to be proactive and think about, you know, what could be some new things that are unpredictable that we could prepare this student for so we could avoid some of these potential challenges for the student and then avoid some of these problem behaviors. If we have these things in place, then we hopefully don't have these conversations.
Well, it's that thoughtful planning, and it's also supporting the teacher in knowing that they're going to have the tools to support the student. I think when a teacher says, you know, the student's behavior makes it so that they can't, you know, it's not going to work for them to be in my class, I think what they're really saying is, I don't have the skills, or I'm not sure how to navigate these behaviors in a way that will allow me to continue to support all of the other students in the class. I think it's really a fear around, how am I going to respond? So proactively sitting down, making that plan is so wise. Thinking about, what are the transition points? What are those times of the day that we know are going to be more difficult? And proactively putting in supports. And then also sharing with that teacher, here are the strategies, here are the tools, here are the different things you can do to support when this comes up. And then also how the team can be accessed to also support if you're needing an additional hand in handling a situation that's challenging.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Everyone just wants to be prepared and ready and on the same page.
Right.
Absolutely. I feel like I could go off on talk about all these topics for a long time. So we've mentioned your book a few times. Tiffany and Erica, can you share a little bit about your book and where people can go to learn more from you both?
Yeah. Well, so Eric and I wrote this book for busy people. Educators, like we talked about, don't have the luxury of time. So we wrote this book. It's called Connecting Through Conversation, a playbook for talking with students. And it really is a playbook of practical, immediately applicable strategies that any educator can use in helping connect with students and really navigate tricky situations and help transform student behavior. Eric and I also believe that any person who has the wonderful opportunity to talk with kids at school, they're an educator. So we're talking about our teachers, obviously, and our paraprofessionals or our educational assistants, our administrators. We're also talking about our office staff and our bus drivers and the folks that work in our cafeterias. We're talking about anyone who has an opportunity to talk with kids. They have this wonderful opportunity to also get to be an educator. So the book in itself is set up with pretty, it's a fast read. You can read it cover to cover. You can also, which we would love, but you can also just pick it up and look at the table of contents and think, oh, I want to learn more about this strategy of really navigating, challenging behaviors. What is this about, creating this kind of mini behavior plan? Or gosh, I've got a kiddo that I need to talk to, and I think that they are not going to be dishonest right away. I'm going to go to the common student move section and look up where they're denying when I know they're being honest and how I can respond there. So anyway, it's Connecting Through Conversation, a playbook for talking with students. Folks can find that on our website, connectingthroughconversation.com. We offer tons of free resources, and we put a blog out frequently. Just lots and lots of information to be able to share with folks. Eric and I really are on a mission to ensure that every single student in every single school feels cared for, loved, and a deep sense of belonging. And we know in order to do that, we have to support their grownups with the skills and strategies and tools that they need to create this culture of connection, because it doesn't happen by accident.
I love that. I'm going to share in our show notes a link to your website and your book, because I love your mission, and I love that it's for busy people. I love that you can read all of it or little snippets. It's so great.
Thank you. And the other thing that I want to make sure that we share with the audience is we also have a really helpful online course that's just quick videos, 5 to 10 minutes each, and it adds up to about 2 hours. And when you go in and watch it in that way, you're able to team with folks that you're working with, even when there isn't time, because you can go watch it separately and then come back together, or you can watch it on your own and use the reflection guide as a piece there. And we do have a discount code for your listeners.
Awesome. Well, we will put that in the show notes as well with all of that information. Thanks so much for sharing the discount code. And thank you, Erica and Tiffany, so much for joining on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. This is such an important topic, so we're really glad you're doing this podcast.
Thank you again.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.